Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the puzzles that might arise for a first-time reader of John Stuart Mill's treatise, Utilitarianism, is given that he makes this distinction between higher and lower pleasures, why would anybody in their right mind, anybody who is experienced or perceptive, prefer lower pleasures to higher pleasures? And we want to keep in mind first, what does Mill actually mean by higher and lower pleasures? So with qualitative utilitarianism, he says that there's a distinction that we can make between pleasures and also a way of life that engages our higher faculties, the things that make us distinctively human, our intellectual faculties, our moral faculties. He also talks about our aesthetic appreciation of things. And that goes beyond what he calls sensibility or the pleasures of the senses. This also applies to pain as well. There can be qualitatively worse pains and qualitatively lesser pains. Here we're more concerned with the issue of pleasure. And the way that Mill describes it is that how do we know that something is a higher pleasure? Well, we look at those who are actually experienced in both types of pleasures, and we see which one they elevate and which one they put lower. And the way that we actually do this is we look to see which one they prefer in situations where they can't have both of them. Because if they can have both of them, Mill sees no problem with that. As a matter of fact, from a utilitarian perspective, we can enjoy every pleasure possible. That's wonderful. We often do have to make choices, prioritizations, even sacrifices. And then Mill says that in a case like that, the ideal judge, the person who really is in touch with the values of the pleasures, will prefer the higher to the lower pleasures. So given the choice between, for example, books and beer, if you can't have both, well, then you're going to prefer books because that engages your intellectual faculties. Given the chance to go out and have a nice dinner party with your friends or to engage in some socially beneficial activity, you will engage in the socially beneficial activity because that engages your moral faculties. And we can go on and on and on. So then the question is, okay, granting that, why would anybody, once they experience pleasures, why would they ever prefer, as it seems most people indeed do, lower pleasures to higher pleasures? And Mill has some good answers for this. And he considers two objections early on in chapter 2 of Utilitarianism. So one objection is that we do see people, as he says, postpone a higher pleasure for a lower pleasure. They go for the lower pleasure, which is right there in front of them, and then that means that they have to put off engaging in a higher pleasure. What might be an example of this? I'm set up to read some John Stuart Mill, which should be an intellectual activity, should be quite pleasurable because he's actually a good writer, not like his predecessor Jeremy Bentham, who's very dry to read, but Mill is quite interesting. So I'm ready to do this, and then I get distracted by something else. I start perhaps watching a comedy show on Netflix, and it's not a particularly intellectually stimulating one. It's just kind of a goofy one, and I get sucked into this thing where I watch show after show after show until I fall asleep and the book never gets opened up. Now, why does that sort of thing happen? Well, Mill has an explanation for this. He says that many who are capable of the higher pleasures occasionally under the influence of temptation postpone them to the lower, but this is quite compatible with a full appreciation of an intrinsic superiority of the higher. Men often, from infirmity of character, make their election for the nearer good, whatever is easier to acquire, whatever is closer in time. reading a book, right? You have to get into it, and it takes a bit of time to figure out what's being said. So he says, they know that this is less valuable, and this no less when the choice is between two bodily pleasures than when it is between bodily and mental. So they pursue sensual indulgences to the injury of health, though perfectly aware that health is the greater good. People do this in terms of bodily pleasures. Why can't they do it in terms of bodily and mental pleasures? It makes perfect sense. People, again, do this all of the time. Just think about, you know, for his example, how many people sign up for gym memberships that they will never actually use beyond, say, the first week. This is how gyms make their money. They know this dynamic. Similarly, we may find that people say that they're going to do something that is intellectually stimulating or morally valuable or aesthetically pleasing as opposed to merely sensibly pleasing, and then they go for the sensual pleasures. That happens. The other objection is in some respects more interesting. He says, what about younger people who early on in their life, they have in fact been introduced to the higher pleasures, and they do pursue them, the pleasures of the mind, the pleasures of the human heart, you might say. And then as time goes on, as they get older, something changes. They shift. They're no longer interested in those, and they focus on the sensual pleasures. So he says, this can be understood just as well. He says, I don't believe that those who undergo this very common change, he's saying that it is common, voluntarily choose the lower description of pleasures in preference to the higher. So what's really going on there? He tells us, I believe that before they devote themselves exclusively to the one, they've already become incapable of the other. He says, capacity for the noble feelings is in most natures a very tender plant, easily killed, not just by hostile influences, things coming in from the outside, but from mere want of sustenance. And in the majority of young persons, it speedily dies away if the occupations to which their position in life has devoted them and the society in which it has thrown them are not favorable to keeping that in exercise. So although we may start out with good experience of both the higher and the lower pleasures, unless we're actively using our mental faculties, unless we're getting the sort of stimulation that we need, and perhaps even engaging in some deliberate reflection and choices to do something with it, it's going to wither away. And in a case like that, the person shifts from the higher to the lower pleasures because they no longer appreciate the higher pleasures as higher pleasures. What is the sign of that? The very fact that they do prefer the lower, that they tell you why, say, sitting and drinking in front of the fireplace is preferable to cracking open a book or having an intellectual conversation or going out and doing some, you know, strenuous but rewarding activities or listening to a symphony. They'd rather just let Netflix play on and on and on while they sit there drinking some wine or beer or cocktails or whatever. These sort of cases show us that Mill does have some explanation for how people lose or don't actuate their capacity for these higher pleasures and then end up preferring the lower. There's also another interesting issue, which is, as he sees it, a major problem with society of his time. And I think you could say that from a utilitarian perspective, it's also a major problem in our contemporary society, which is that most people do not have moral and intellectual development fostered within their life, which makes it impossible for them to appreciate the higher pleasures because they never had a shot at it in the first place. He talks about people say, a lot of people are willing to sacrifice pleasure or happiness. He says, yeah, 19/20 of the population routinely have to do this because of the kind of work that they're stuck doing. So what would afford the possibility for people to not miss out on the development of their intellectual and moral faculties? Well, education would have to play a role in that, and you might say also a reorganization of society, including the economy. Interestingly, this probably applies almost as much in our own time as it did in Mill's own time in the heart of the Industrial Revolution, when many people were sinking into what later would be called the proletariat or working class, and many people were working very late hours, children were getting drawn into the workplace rather than being afforded the possibility for education. Even if we have educational institutions, they may not be of the sort that do in fact lead to effective moral and intellectual development, in which case Mill would say, from a utilitarian perspective, what is really desirable is to rework them so that that does become a possibility for everybody. So he's talking about the opportunity for human development, distinctively human development, not merely to satisfy lower pleasures, which are in fact pleasures. He's not saying they're bad at all, but to afford the possibility of higher pleasures. This becomes a duty from a utilitarian perspective if we take quality into account. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.